session. So these days, seems like our fuses are shorter than ever. Like we're extra vulnerable to getting worked up and impulsively acting out. So it seems to me the question is, how can we do our part to de-escalate this trend, find our wisdom, and contribute to a better world? I want to start by exploring a fundamental tendency that's a core obstacle to this. This is the habit of attachment. And like all conditioned habits, attachment operates swiftly and unconsciously. It often works like this. I'm in a good mood, quite happily living my day, then something happens, and suddenly I'm hijacked. Now I'm feeling ticked off, or anxious, or disappointed, or hurt. There's an energetic charge that often goes with this too. Sometimes it's kind of a visceral tightening, or a sense of heating up, or even sometimes a sudden drop in energy. But I've disconnected from my heart and lost equanimity. Now I'm defensive and contracted. As Pema Chodron names it, I've just gotten hooked. And this habit of getting hooked can happen with minor events as well as major, like when someone looks at you a certain way, or criticizes your child, or cuts you off in conversation. It can happen when that stupid blankety-blank jar lid won't open, or that pot of oatmeal boils up all over the stove. It can happen when someone abruptly dismisses you, or when you're reading about Congress's umpteen failed attempt to pass a bill that could really help, or when you're hearing about anti-vaxxers or lies about election fraud. It can happen when you're so looking forward to taking a long, vigorous walk and your knees suddenly say, oh no, you can't. It can happen when a colleague mansplains you by telling you how to do something you've been doing brilliantly long before he ever arrived on the job. If we're not aware of our reaction, it can easily spiral into a fight with ourselves, the other person, or with this object, because this charged feeling propels us to act. But that action is destined to create misery because we'll act out of conditioning rather than wisdom. Typically, we go into blaming mode, blaming ourselves, the other, or the object. And this drives us to act aggressively toward whatever we think is causing the disturbance. If we continue to get dragged along in this energy, it can spiral down into huge conclusions that can leave us feeling ashamed, hopeless, or despairing. We might think, I'm pathetic. I'm always going to be anxious and depressed. Or those people are so stupid, so self-serving, we'll never find our way out of this. We can be abducted by this mind state for minutes, hours, who knows how long. A woman in class told the story of taking her young puppy to the dog park for the very first time with some friends. When she let her puppy off leash, he ran gleefully off with the other dogs, so happy to be free. But after a bit, she became worried about his safety, so she called to him to come back. When he ignored her call, she called him again, to no avail. A man nearby, seeing this, walked over and asked if he could give her some advice. He said, "You just call once, and if your dog ignores you, there's no point in calling him again." This remark, surely intended to be helpful, triggered something, and she stewed about this for days, rolling the incident over and over in her mind, caught in a whirlwind of emotions, angry at him, herself, feeling embarrassed in front of her friends, and lots of confusion. She just couldn't put it down. She imagined arguments with this man who dared to impose his view on her, and sending texts explaining herself to her friends. When she at last explored her experience, she realized this had provoked her fear of not being perfect. Recognizing her attachment to this old belief, she could finally be compassionate with herself and let the whole thing go. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Is this familiar? Why do we get so hooked? And how can we find the wisdom? How can we let go to find the wisdom, peace, and joy of living from our open hearts? Attachment is rooted in desire, wanting and not wanting something. We attach to a desire when we believe we must have this particular person, condition, or thing in order to be safe, secure, or happy. Attachment also takes the forms of aversion, what we believe will make us unhappy, what we don't want. Just think for a moment of your least favorite person to instantly feel the effect of negative attachment. Desire itself is not the problem, though. Desire is the juice of life. It's what gets us out of bed in the morning. It inspires us to make our life and world a better place. It's our psychological fuel for living. Desire motivates us on every aspect of our lives, from making that great cup of coffee in the morning, to creating a beautiful song, to developing satisfying work, to being the best possible mother for our kids, to being present at the bedside of a dear friend who is dying. What gets us into trouble is when we go unconscious with desire, unknowingly believing things must be this certain way or else. Then our well-being is firmly hitched to this, and when this desire is thwarted, we object. We cling, grasp, and hold on to whatever we believe should be happening, and resist what's actually happening. Buddhist teachings say it's this habit of clinging to what we want that creates our suffering. This is the essence of the second noble truth, right? And the third noble truth says we can end our suffering by letting go of whatever we're clinging to and accept what's here in this moment. So the true path to liberation is to let go of everything. By letting go of everything, we rest in the basic goodness and wholeness of our true nature and find our wisdom. Sounds pretty simple, but of course it isn't. Living in these physical bodies with their six sense doors, what we see, hear, smell, taste, the sensations we feel, and what our mind creates, we strongly prefer what gives us pleasure and comfort. So we think things like, if only I had that new pair of shoes, or a deep massage, or a new adventure, then I'd be happy. Though we know these superficial things only satisfy us temporarily, we can still persistently cling to them. We attach as well to our judgments, opinions, and expectations about how I should be, how you should be, and how the world should be. Sometimes I catch myself thinking, if everyone would just agree with me, then everything would be how it should be. Do you know that one? Clearly, attaching to our opinions and views causes enormous suffering, leading to long-held resentments, polarization, and wars. But the teachings say the root attachment beneath it all is attaching to a sense of a self, to an I, to a me. We attach to the idea that there's a separate me that must be promoted, protected, and satisfied at all times. Everything else we cling to arises from this. Yet attaching to an idea of self is a normal characteristic of the conditioned mind. Being consciousness, living in the confines of these physical bodies, naturally leads us to feel separate from everything that appears to be outside of ourselves. We have the sense of a self or a me in here and a world out there. So it's logical to feel separate, and it's certainly healthy and necessary to learn how to satisfy and protect ourselves on this embodied plane of existence. As children growing up in our families, so vulnerable and dependent, we know how vital it is to develop healthy and stable bonds to our parents and caregivers. This helps us form trusting relationships as we grow into our adult lives. But what creates our suffering is from getting this sense of separateness isn't the complete picture. We forget to remember that ultimately, we are all connected. As Einstein reminds us, quote, a human being is a part of the whole, a part limited in time and space. We experience ourself, our thoughts and feelings as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical illusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and affection for a select few. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening the circle of understanding and compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. End quote. The essence of spirituality, I think, is to know and trust this bigger view, that we're all connected, that everything is connected. Feeling separate creates an undercurrent of existential fear, a kind of hum of instability, or a constant anxious quiver or squeeze. Tara Brach says the primal mood of the separate self is fear, fear of being vulnerable, of being hurt, of being annihilated. Further, this illusion causes us to view our world dualistically. We fear that what I need may be in opposition to what you and others need. It pits me against you. To protect ourselves from this anxious quiver of uncertainty, our minds build a protective cocoon of beliefs. But what really cinches our suffering is when our beliefs become solidified as the truth. We come to believe that without that person, condition, or thing, we can never be happy or secure. Or in the negative version, as long as that person, condition, or thing is in our lives, we can't be happy. When we take these beliefs as truths, it's hard to spot them with clarity. Instead, they lurk under the surface of awareness, operating unconsciously. And when our sense of self becomes merged with these beliefs, our need to get and keep this something or someone intensifies. Sometimes we're more attached to the belief than the actual person, thing, or condition. I remember when I first separated from my husband many years ago, I was surprised to realize that while grieving the loss of his physical presence in my life was a process that took time, it took way longer to let go of the belief I'd internalized from patriarchy as a girl. My sense of self had incorporated the belief that to be acceptable as a woman, I'd be married to a man and live happily ever after. Without that identity to prop me up, who was I then? When we look precisely at what's happening in the mind, we see the mind creates an imagined self, constructed from the various images, beliefs, and identities we unconsciously carry around. If you were to describe yourself right now, what would you say? Perhaps that you're kind, loving, competent, smart, or funny? Or maybe you say you're depressed, anxious, too striving, or out of shape. Or maybe you'd name your role, what you do. You're a mother, daughter, artist, athlete, meditator, writer. Or perhaps you'd name your political identity, a feminist, a social justice activist. All these self-descriptors make us feel subtly distinct. Though we prefer the positive images, our negative images also underline our separateness. They make us feel unique in a certain way. These images and identities become the stories our minds tell us about ourselves over and over. But they're not the full picture. They're just partial versions of the truth, truths we adopt to feel a particular way. And they can keep us caught in our history, our wounds, and our fears. We also carry around beliefs about others, how they should treat us, and what's supposed to happen in the world. Some of these beliefs are true and serve us well, but many are not, and they keep us confined. We know beliefs get unconsciously planted early in our lives, and they bias our view of reality. So a good chunk of the healing work we all need to do is to discover those deeply held beliefs, understand where they come from, and reevaluate whether or not they still hold true. As women, the ways we've internalized the misogyny and sexism in our culture profoundly shapes our beliefs about the self we're supposed to be. Namely, we're expected to be pleasing, responsible, always giving, empathetic, and attractive. We're not supposed to be aggressive, domineering, angry, or too smart, or too passionate, or too powerful. You know the list. Then add to this how we were treated as we grew up in our families and the various traumas we experienced as our life has unfolded. These beliefs all fuel the judgments and stories the mind repeatedly plays, those neural grooves, you know. We want to be the good me, the attractive me, the giving me. We don't want to be the damaged me, the anxious me, the not enough me. Though all of this gives us a sense of being somebody, being attached to these images and beliefs rarely brings us happiness. Being blind to our attachments primes us for getting hooked. A woman shared this experience when she was putting together a table she'd bought from IKEA. Knowing she gets a lot of satisfaction from construction projects, it makes her feel competent. She wanted to get this built before her husband came home to surprise him. She also wanted to avoid his tendency to take over projects like this, where she often feels criticized and inadequate. It was going well until she hit a big snag with the directions. As her frustration rose, her mind started running stories of how utterly stupid and lame she was, and imagining her husband swooping in with his corrective criticism. She was absorbed in her fury when he suddenly walked in the door. Hooked by her mind's stories, she lashed out at him defensively before he even said a word. She was stunned by her ugly attack on him. Sadly, it's often under these conditions that we forget our beloved is not our enemy. Besides being attached to the people we believe we can't live without, of course, what else does our mind cling to? Seems like comfort is a biggie. On some very deep level, we assume we should always feel comfortable. And when we don't, we think something's wrong. As one woman put it, life is supposed to be comfortable. So this means I can't be happy while my body is in pain, and I can't be happy when any of my loved ones are upset. Clinging to this belief is destined to create misery, since we know pain and suffering are part of being alive. And even though intellectually we know there are so few things we actually have control over in life, still most of us are quite attached to an illusion of control. We think that if we could just be perfect, that would solve our problems. Then everyone would be happy. As one woman said, then I'd never lose it with my kids, no matter how awful they got. Sometimes we even think that if we were really evolved, we'd have no problems at all. When we believe our well-being is inextricably tied to these certain conditions, most of which are out of our control and impermanent, we're destined to get hooked and suffer, right? So clearly, if we want to be truly happy and free, we need to let go of whatever we're clinging to that's causing our misery, and instead accept what is actually happening in this moment. Indeed, Buddhist teachings are full of reminders that the true path to liberation is to let go of everything. As Ajahn Chah says, if you let go a little, you'll have a little happiness. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of happiness. If you let go completely, you'll be free. So let's turn now to how we can help ourselves do that. First, since all we cling to is rooted in the illusion of a separate self, if we can see how the mind creates this illusion, it's much easier to let it go. Sitting meditation gives us the best container to see this clearly. As we meditate, we're observing the changing flow of experience, noticing whatever is predominant. We practice observing this with curiosity, kindness, acceptance, and without identifying with it, without taking any of this personally. Much of the time, what's predominant is mental activity, thoughts, stories, memories, imaginings, fantasies, and their accompanying emotions. As we observe this closely, we see how the mind is frequently creating an image of a self, a me. It's spinning inner dramas and scenarios about what we're doing, who we are, what others think of us, what happened to us, or what could happen to us. We see there is a very active me that's busy doing or experiencing something. It's quite astounding to see how this imaginary self is created over and over in the mind. Sometimes we're imagining a self we want to be, at other times imagining a self we condemn or fear. But amazingly, all of this is just mind. If we maintain the perspective of observing these experiences, we stay stable and open as all of this arises and passes away on its own. But the moment we identify with the content, we lose this observing perspective. We're instantly pulled into the story, and carried off in the drama. Now we're attached to this Imagine Me story, and who knows where it will take us. We'll be absorbed into this, unaware of true reality, until something happens to wake us up from this. And then we think, oh yes, that's right. Back to the breath, please. With observing mode reestablished, we let go of the me story. It's so freeing to understand this is what the conditioned mind does. It's habitually creating ideas of a self. Whenever the mind identifies with the content, it becomes that content. When fear arises, we think, I'm afraid. Or when confusion arises, we think, I'm confused. As we're absorbed into the content, it's difficult to remember the unconditioned mind, consciousness, is the open space in which all this content is occurring, in which experiences are continuously arising and passing away. This inner spaciousness of mind is like the sky, open, unbiased, fundamentally stable and sound, and always available to us. Experiencing this open spaciousness of mind is the essence of letting go, allowing room for everything, and holding on to nothing. By letting go of who we imagine ourselves to be, by letting go of thoughts, by letting go of our attempts to control others in the world, by letting go of whatever we're attached to, we find our wholeness, we find stability, we find calm. By seeing all the content as simply process, as the moment-to-moment passing show, we discover our open, compassionate heart. To develop a mind that clings to nothing is said, then, to be the path to wisdom. Thoughts arise, sensations are felt, moods form. There are preferences and opinions arising, but when we observe this clearly, there is no identifying, no attaching, no sticking, and no suffering. The most effective method for not attaching to what comes into the mind is the marvelous mindfulness tool of softly noting. Naming what's predominant without adding those powerful personal pronouns. By softly noting thinking instead of I'm thinking, it's innately easier to drop the content and return to open, spacious awareness. When painful sensations are predominant, softly noting aching or throbbing, instead of thinking my back hurts, makes it possible to remain steady while witnessing the direct experience of the sensation. And in doing so, we avoid getting pulled into fearful me stories about what this backache might mean. Softly noting releases the imagined self, and we stay present, observing the impermanent shifting flow of experience. Another layer of letting go entails examining those beliefs we're attached to. By diving deeper to see if we can discover our most believed thoughts, we may realize what we're clinging to is unachievable or unrealistic. We may also realize what we believe doesn't serve us anymore. Beliefs like, everyone has to like me, or I must be perfect in all I do. Or as one woman said, I have to be strong and competent until the very moment I finally drop dead. We know clinging to these beliefs only causes suffering. Of course, to let go requires acceptance, often radical acceptance about what I can and cannot control and what's actually possible in this moment. As we recognize reality clearly, we can shift from our demand that these things be certain ways to the preference that they be this way. We can move from a clenched fist holding on so tightly we're getting floor burns from being dragged around by it, to letting our desire rest gently in our open hands. We can encourage ourselves to loosen our grip and accept things as they are right now. For example, when I'm hurting and I really want my dear friend's support, when I realize and accept that right now she's too absorbed in her own issues to be able to listen to my woes, out of compassion for both of us, I can release my grip on what I want without making either of us bad or wrong. Whenever we can make this move, we find relief from the tension of clinging and the spaciousness and natural wisdom of our true nature. Pema Chodron suggests that whenever we're hooked, whenever we realize we're hooked, whether by a certain look from someone, our own self-judgment, or when it feels like the rug just got pulled out beneath us, here's what we can do to help ourselves let go. First, recognize this by softly noting, here's getting hooked. Second, refrain from acting out by creating a pause to bring in some spaciousness. Creating inner space is essential. So we can feel the body breathing, look up at the blue sky, listen to the sounds you can actually hear right now. Whatever works for you to create a spacious pause. Then third, open to those uncomfortable feelings in the body. The uneasiness, the shakiness, the rise in tension, the urge to act. And relax around all those sensations, simply letting them be. It's helpful to remember that these feelings are not permanent and they're not solid. Then, knowing some attachment to self is operative, we can ask, what am I believing that I must have right now? And open to whatever occurs to you. Then with kindness and compassion, stay steady and spacious as this experience passes through you, unwinding and unraveling as it will on its own. Pema says this is a practice that we'll do over and over and over. In fact, she says, probably for the rest of our lives. Another very helpful practice suggested by Ezra Beda in his book, The Authentic Life, is the practice of saying to yourself when you're hooked, no one special to be. No one special to be. This cues us to recognize that right now we're caught up in an idea of self. And repeating this like a mantra helps us see through the stories and beliefs we're attached to, so we can choose to let them go. As we practice this, the sense of who we are, who we're supposed to be, so we think, begins to lose its heaviness, its rigidity. And gradually, our habitual self-images begin to lose their grip and their power over us. As we let go of them, we no longer feel the need to stand out or habitually diminish ourselves. We no longer feel the compulsion to see ourselves or to have to be seen in particular ways. As the illusion of separateness falls away, we find the relief and freedom of simply being present, open, and connected to all. A woman who said guilt is her default reaction and biggest hook decided to practice this. She said, whenever she notes guilt arising and says to herself, no one special to be, and feels her breath, opens to the uncomfortable sensations as gently as she can, she pops right out of the feeling. Then, when she inquires about what expectations she's failed to live up to, she's able to let that go as well. She said this practice is giving her enormous relief. Another woman, who is often triggered by certain members of her large family and can be lost in painful turmoil for days, decided to dedicate a solid week to learning how to let go by practicing being nobody. Her intention was to observe her experience and let go of all the stories and ideas about herself she could spot. Every time she felt even the slightest irk in her interactions, she said to herself, no one special to be. No one special to be. She said the effect of practicing this was remarkable ease. She felt more peacefulness and lightness than she'd felt in years. Then, out of the blue, she got a phone call from her brother-in-law of 54 years. From the moment her sister had introduced him to the family, she'd felt a strong aversion to him. She found him dominating, negative, and bullyish. Loving her sister as she did, she kept her feelings under wraps and did all she could to avoid him in family gatherings. When her sister died 6 years ago, she felt relief knowing she'd never had contact with this man again. So when he called, she felt aghast, knowing she'd have to call him back. So before calling him, she decided to continue to practice no one special to be, drop all the old stories, judgments, and feelings about him, and do her best to simply be present. As they talked, she said to her amazement, her heart warmed and opened to him, to the extent that she considered inviting him to their Thanksgiving. It was a complete shift from her closed, armored heart to a completely open heart. It was a wonderful and amazing transformation. She said, quote, "Myself wasn't in the way as it always had been, and my clenched heart finally relaxed." When we can let go of the illusion of a separate self and all we cling to, and instead rest in the spaciousness of mind in which those thoughts and imaginings arise, our hearts open and our sense of connection with everything expands. Through letting go, we naturally find the inner spaciousness within which our wisdom and wise action can then easily arise. In these times, where so many of us are worried about the state of the world, and fears and tensions are so high, though we know we can't save the world on our own, we can help significantly by de-escalating ourselves whenever we're triggered. So the next time you realize you're hooked, consider yourself fortunate. It's a chance to shift the old habit of erecting self-protective barriers and find true connection. Remembering there's no one special to be, you can choose to let go of those self-images and beliefs and align instead with the wholeness and wisdom of simply being. Each time you do this, you are not only creating peace within yourself, but the result of your efforts will ripple out to all. Let's sit together for a moment, please. So after a few minutes of pausing, stretching, doing whatever you need to do, we'll continue on with the walking meditation or mindful movement in the chair. Thank you.